Now, given that it's Wednesday, it is Wellness Wednesday, and multiple sclerosis is a chronic, often unpredictable disease that affects the central nervous system. And I'm joined now by Louise Power. Good morning to you, Louise.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Not at all. It's great to speak to someone. You were diagnosed with MS 10 years ago, so I suppose it's great to speak to yourself to get an understanding. How does it affect you daily, Louise?
So every day is different. So there might be one day you can do everything and anything that you want, and then there's days where there's stiffness or weakness, spasms. You know, it's so varied. There is no 2 days the same, or no 2 people the same.
And at what age were you diagnosed with it?
I was 32. Just coming up to my 30, yeah, I was 32. It was just after the birth of my second son. So I had a 2-year-old at home and a newborn when I was diagnosed.
And were the symptoms leading up to that very debilitating for you? Did you know there was something wrong?
Oh, when I look back, I would have had issues, a few years previous or even longer than that. I had tests done for, say, carpal tunnel in my late teens, early 20s, and they were all negative. So it was just sort of put down to, it could be something or nothing. Wasn't followed up. And then after the birth of my first son, things weren't kind of right, but I was like, no, keep going. You're a new mum. This is things to expect, or you have fatigue, or you're so tired all of the time. It's just because you're looking after a newborn and, coming to terms with how things are now. And then after Kieran was born in 2015, I just knew something was wrong because I couldn't physically hold him in my right arm without supporting it. And so you're trying to feed him, but you had to make sure there's a pillow underneath your arm on the couch or the chair, and or use your other arm to kind of support the arm. Just it was strange.
It must have been so difficult, as you've talked about there, being a new mum, and with that comes so many pressures in itself. You're recovering yourself, but to then be given this diagnosis, it must have been very hard to comprehend it and kind of plan your life now.
Yeah, it was. It's very surreal, and it does take time to come to terms with it. I remember you coming. So after I had scans done, I then had to go back to the GP, and then they were telling me that there was something shown on the MRI, which was demyelination, but it could be any number of things. I remember, just tell me what it is. I need, don't leave me sort of hanging, because that's nearly worse, because your mind goes into overdrive. So the referral was sent to the neurologist. Then I had an 8-week wait to see him, and throughout that time I was like, what's going to happen? Am I going to end up in a wheelchair? What's going to, are the boys going to see me? Am I going to see the boys growing up? There's a lot went through my mind, and at times those little things keep coming up again, but you just, once you have the diagnosis, it does take a while to accept and to learn the new you, or what you can do, what limitations there is, or what you could do to help.
And is it is MS a disease or a condition that progresses quite quickly, or it's something that you just deal with throughout your life?
It can vary from person to person. So I was diagnosed with relapse and remitting MS. And on the day of diagnosis, I remember Dr. Coonan telling me that I was at high risk of fast progression. Okay. So we needed to start a DMT, a disease modifying drug, kind of, more or less straight away. After some tests were done to try and knock it on its head, so the DMTs, all they do is stop progression, or try to stop progression. If you're on the right one, it can. Sometimes you have to try a few before you see a difference. So I'm currently on my third one.
Okay.
But then there's primary progressive MS and secondary progressive MS. So you can go from relapse and remitting into other stages.
Yeah, so it's just monitoring it very closely as the years go on. Is that the way it kind of is?
Yeah, regular scans, regular appointments, like yearly appointments with the neurologist. You have a phone line for an MS. Well, I have in Mayo, we have Galway. So you, if there is anything that crops up or if you aren't well, you can kind of run it past a nurse and they'll take it from there, you know, if they think it is the MS or... Like the heat can affect some people, mm-hmm. so it kind of brings symptoms on, but it's not actually a relapse.
And in terms of now moving forward, you're looking to raise awareness of hidden disabilities. So people like having conditions like yourself with MS that they don't feel stigmatized. Is this something that you yourself have experienced a lot of?
Yeah, because the big comment from people is, but you look okay. And I'm like, yeah, but inside is a whole other ballgame. Mm. Because, you know, it is the nervous system, the myelin is stripped from the nervous system, and you can't just regrow it. Now, they are trying to research this, but like, there's days where I might need to use a stick. You know, there's days where I might need to sit down more, or use the bathroom, you know. And when you go places or you're planning anything, it does take planning.
Yeah.
You can't just get up and go. The MS Ireland conference is coming up in November, so I'm sort of planning my days and meal prep and, you know, having an idea of what I'm going to do before it, and then have stuff in the house for when I come back, you know, because I will be tired, and I know I will.
And there's so many people out there with different illnesses and conditions that are in the same boat as us. You know, we were talking yesterday about, you know, parking bays, or earlier in the week, you know, disabled parking bays. But, you know, they're calling for sunflower parking to be rolled out because, you know, people with a hidden disability or different conditions.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea, because, you know, not everybody, the wheelchair bays sort of make people think you should be in a wheelchair to use this, or, you know, there's days where you might need closer access to a shop door or to a business. And there's days where you won't. And, you know, it's just, but having more awareness around hidden disabilities is huge.
And as part of this awareness campaign, you're having an MS readathon.
Yeah. So I have been asked to be the MS readathon ambassador this year, which I'm over the moon to have been asked. And again, it's just about raising awareness, because there's over 11,000 people living with MS in Ireland, and the readathon. So you can actually look at the website, and it's msreadathon.ie. There you can go and register. It's open to the young. It's open to adults, book clubs, schools, businesses. You know, anyone can take part in it.
And it's great, I suppose, as well, to get all, as you mentioned, young and old involved in this, and it raises greater awareness. And even, I'm sure, among, you know, your own children as well, to get involved in this, it's part of their life too.
It is, and they're very excited to take part. So the three of us are taking part. So there'll be a competition to see who's going to to raise the most money. And but they love reading anyway, so it's kind of like a joy for them to be doing two things at once. And, you know, they're getting a bit older, and they understand things more about MS and how it may affect, but also they're telling their school friends, because the school is actually getting involved, and they've registered all the classes, and then so they're being able to tell their friends all about it and why it's so important.
Yeah, and it's great just to raise so much awareness. For anybody else out there, Louise, that has multiple sclerosis, where would you direct them to the best point of contact for more information or support that you felt that you needed?
So definitely the best place, the first place I would go to is the ms-society.ie. It's the MS Ireland website. There you can find details on branches, because I know different parts of the country there's different branches. I'm involved heavily with the South Mayo branch, and there's Donegal, you know, there is all over the country. On the website, you can also find out about your local community worker, who may be able to help you or guide you in different ways if you're newly diagnosed. And even if you're not newly diagnosed but have never reached out, it's the website is a really good place to start. And then again, just you can check out the msreadathon.ie for information on how you can help. So just as an example, on the website, you can see what €25 would go towards, or €50. You know, there's helpful resources on it and fundraising ideas.
Louise Pyer, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and all the very best with the readathon. Thank you so much for helping us raise a bit of awareness.
Shekalaha Ama Highland Radio. Arna Dor Tugat Ig Airgrid. Ubror Agus Vorbor Anga Letrahas Naharan. Airgrid. Pubble Aguaktu, Ira Aguaktu. Heshe.
The time is now 16 minutes past 11. A message coming in. A big congratulations to Kevin Bradley and all the gang at Highland Bakery as they're celebrating 25 years in business today. A major achievement. So congratulations to all at Highland Bakery. Another listener says, what headspace are voters in? Why would we vote for a person who didn't attempt to make right a financial wrong for years, while we as lay people are fined and prisoned for similar or less? Another listener says, we were talking about the bar of chocolate was over €2. Somebody else has said a bar of chocolate in Super Savers Buncrana is €1.29. So there you go. If you're on the hunt and don't want to pay over €2, you know where to go. Now, a review of the response to Storm Éowyn has been published by the National Directorate of Fire and Emergency Management. One of the recommendations includes the cancelling of events due to orange weather warnings. I'm joined by Alan O'Reilly of Carlow Weather. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Michael.
So, Alan, is this something that you would agree with?
No, but not in really. I think, you know, there could be some merit to the fact that outdoor events with temporary structures that, you know, are not suitable for strong winds could be cancelled. But my main issue is that the system of weather warnings would have to be improved before anything like this would be done. So, for example, you know, the fact that the weather warnings are only done county by county and not any more detailed than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you know, you can fit almost six County Louds into County Donegal, but yet we get a warning for Loud as an individual area, but the Donegal warning covers the whole of Donegal. And, you know, I'm sure I don't need to tell your listeners how much the weather can vary from one part of Donegal to the other, especially from north to south.
And I suppose, you know, it has to be considered as well, the weather warning, you know, the wind and the rain doesn't just stop at that borderline. You know, there is going to be an element of, you know, Donegal picking up different weather from Sligo. It's not as simple as that.
Exactly. So I think if you look at, you know, the UK Met Office who issued the warnings for Northern Ireland, it's done on a more graphical area, you know. But especially when it's done across the water in, you know, parts of England, the warnings are much more detailed that they use, and they're much more granular. So, you know, like Donegal, Galway, Cork, Kerry, these large counties, you know, you would break it up into maybe north, south, east, west, even as a starting point. And the other thing is the warnings were upgraded very often very late in the day.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that with the last warning with Donegal, you know, with Storm Amy. Like the red warning came very late in the day. Very often yellow warnings are upgraded to orange with only a couple of hours notice. So for event organisers, I mean, you can imagine if you have an outdoor event and you have a lot of people heading there and it's a yellow warning and they're going ahead, and then with less than maybe 3 or 4 hours notice, they're told it's an orange warning. Do they have to tell all those people now to turn away because it's being upgraded to orange?
And you'll understand the weather system a lot more than I do, Alan, but does that weather pattern change that quickly that, say, you give the example there of Storm Amy, that we are only given the 2 hours notice for it to be upgraded to red?
Well, certainly the track of storms can change, and certainly you can see some, you know, small last minute kind of changes in direction and track. That can happen. But generally speaking, I think, you know, it's left too late in the day to make the call. I think, you know, I mean, obviously 24 hours out, you could have changes, or maybe even 12 hours. But I think really changing warnings less than 12 hours from the time that they come into effect, it's very confusing for people. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will look at the weather forecast and they'll say it's a yellow warning, it's an orange warning, and they'll take that and they'll go about their business. And they're not checking back every 10 minutes to see has the warning upgraded. Mm. So I think there does need to be a lot more consideration given to that. One of the other big things is that comes out of this report, because this is obviously based on a review of Storm Éowyn, is the fact that communications, when there's power outages, you know, power lines, phone lines, mm-hmm. mobile ball lines go down, that local radio is absolutely the last saving grace, and FM is king. And I think there's a much bigger role there for, you know, Met Air and the National Emergency System to use local radio to communicate to people a lot more in terms of these severe events.
Yeah, because we find it here as well, you know, we might have power outages locally, but thankfully we're able to remain on air. And even aside from weather events, we are, you know, the point of contact for a lot of elderly or more vulnerable people. And, you know, they need that information, as you said there, to be prepared, to know that the red weather alert's coming into force, that they can take their own precautions at home. And I suppose for us, you know, we receive an email into the newsroom, but yeah, I suppose having better communication and, you know, making sure we've received those messages and, you know, that say different ads are being rolled out to ensure we can get the information out as quickly and as widespread as possible.
Yeah, absolutely, because local radio is the last lifeline. From tuning in to see is your school closed on a snow day to knowing whether it's a red warning, you know. And we kind of, I suppose, a lot of people have moved on to rely on their mobile phone, and Storm Éowyn showed how that's all fine when things are working. But when the mobile generators at the mass go down and you now go blind in terms of mobile phone coverage, internet coverage and power, it's really the old FM radio that is the most reliable. And there's a lot of learnings to be made. The problem in Ireland, I think we have a history of writing great reports, and then we're very slow to implement the findings of it.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things in this report. It's over 100 pages. One aspect is that the orange warning would cancel events. But there's a lot of other things in there that need to be done too. And I hope it's not a knee-jerk reaction to just implement this one, because it might sound like an easy one to do.
And I suppose, you know, time really is of the essence. We're seeing more and more storms and more severe weather events that, you know, action does need to be taken immediately in relation to this.
It really does. And I think the power infrastructure is something that a lot of people, you know, were very worried about every time there's a storm. Now, I know people that contact me, especially from the west of Ireland, that were hit worse by Storm Éowyn, they get PTSD and they get very worried about what's going to happen when there's another storm, because some people were without power for over a week. And in fairness to the ESB crews, the work they do is absolutely amazing, but they need assistance. They need more tree cutting, they need more network upkeep that's around the network. And the other thing is, we have to remember, we're talking about weather warnings here. We still have no flood warning system. That's still to come. So, you know, an orange rainfall warning on top of a yellow rainfall warning on top of a week's worth of rain could have absolutely catastrophic impacts in flooding. And we've seen that in Donegal before, where there's been some severe flooding events, and we still don't have a flood warning system, even though it was first announced in 2016. So we're coming up next year on 10 years from the time it was announced that we're going to get a flood warning system.
Yeah, and that's so important, because as you mentioned there earlier, you know, we hear yellow weather warning, we think, yeah, we can still go on and about. But as you referenced, you know, that's just a build up of rain, particularly in areas that are so prone to flooding. That is severe cause for concern. And you mentioned even the PTSD. People hear any type of rainfall in particular areas, they do live in fear that their homes or businesses will be flooded. So that is very important.
It really is. And the most annoying point is that Met Air do now have a flood forecasting team. They do produce forecasts, but they're not shared to the public. They are shared with the local authorities, but the very senior management and local authorities around the country have told me they're not the best place to share that information. You know, that people expect to get warnings for rainfall, for flooding from Met Air. they're not expecting to the county council to issue a flood warning. And with the best will in the world, the council are, you know, only so much that they can do in terms of resources as well. So we really need to get a national flood warning system that takes into account the rainfall, the water levels, and, you know, puts that together. And it's something that has been done in many other countries. Again, the UK Met Office have a very good flood warning system they work with. The problem in Ireland seems to be Metairn and OPW. I've been sent from one to the other for about the last 5 years trying to get updates on the flood warning system. We don't seem to have somebody that's actually in charge of reaching it. There's a joint kind of operation there, and that's great that they work together. But somebody needs to take the lead and somebody needs to start sharing that information.
Yeah. And Alan, do you think the criteria for the different level of warnings now that is in place, like the yellow, orange and red, does that need to be reviewed?
I think we need to move to the impact-based system that they use in the UK. Like in Ireland, now they are moving to it, they say, and they do take the impacts into account. But in the UK, they use the system where, you know, the time of the day, the likely weather, the time of the year. You know, for example, when we get Storm Amy and all the leaves are still on the trees, you're going to have a bigger impact than if you get the same wind speeds 2 months later when there's no leaves on the trees. Mm. And if that storm's coming, you know, at the middle of the afternoon when children are being picked up from school and people are commuting, that has a much bigger impact than if it happens overnight when most people are asleep. So we have to move to an impact-based system because it's almost too, like, okay, it has to be over 130 kilometres an hour to be red, the gusts. But if the forecast is 120 for 3 o'clock in the day, you know, versus 150 at 3 a.m. in the morning, the impact to people can be very different.
Yeah, absolutely. Alan O'Reilly of Carlow Weather, thank you so much for joining us this morning. And yeah, it's a very interesting report. And I suppose a lot of people, you know, as Alan was saying there, taking that impact-based scenario, if we've had a severe storm here in Donegal and then a couple of weeks later we have a lesser storm, it's the impact of the damage that has already been caused by the strong winds. And unfortunately, we're subjected to a lot of them nowadays. Now, I am joined in studio by Chris Ashmore, presenter of Business Matters. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Michaela.
How are you today?
Very good. Nice day.
Yeah,
nice autumnal day. Yes,
yeah, it wasn't great this morning, but no. It's lovely now. So what is happening this week in the world of business?
Well, just to start off, a couple of local events that may be of interest. There's a Business Watch seminar in Dillon's Hotel in Letterkenny this evening at 6 o'clock, hosted by Letterkenny Chamber. The guest speaker will be Sergeant Fergus McGrory, who's the Crime Prevention Officer here in Donegal. So in the lead up to Christmas, business is very busy and he'll have some tips on many little simple crime prevention measures that you can take, because unfortunately we see a spike in shoplifting and there is more crime around Christmas, including break-ins as well. So that's on at 6 this evening. You can register by text or WhatsApp. The number is 087-213-0495. That's 087-213-0495 for that. And speaking of events locally, tomorrow there is a business breakfast being promoted by Letterkenny Chamber and Leanra Letterkiannon, and it's taking place in Kernan's Bistro from 8:30 in the morning there in Letterkenny to 10 o'clock. And there will be examples of how a number of local companies have brought Irish into their business and used it. Might be just
Letterkenny is a Gaeltacht town, isn't it?
Well, the whole Leanra Letterkenny, they're really promoting the town. And you know, there's examples of people just, it could be just initially starting with signs, greeting people and just making people know that you can speak Irish there. So examples of success stories and also information on the grants available. So no fluency is needed. So don't let that put you off if you don't have Irish. So
like
just
me,
come
yeah.
along. And that's at 8:30 in Kernan's Bistro in Letterkenny. And they're expecting a good crowd for that.
Yeah. Right. And the National Lottery has been hitting out at the sale of scratch cards to under 18s.
Yes. Now, they have done a survey on a number of occasions because it's illegal for under-18s to buy scratch cards. They have noted significant progress on this issue, but say more needs to be done. Sounds like a party political broadcast, that. so they did a test survey sending out people. 562 retail premises were visited by these mystery shoppers who were boys and girls aged between 15 and 17 years old. Now, 72% of them were denied a sale when attempting to buy a 1 euro scratch card, but 28% were successful, which is still quite a high number. So they're monitoring that and trying to reduce the number of under-18s who are getting scratch cards because it is illegal. Meanwhile, the annual report shows that sales of national lottery tickets reached 855 million euro last year. That was up.
So they're funding well, their prize pots?
They certainly are. That was up, about 30 million on the previous year. So quite significant. And
their advertising is obviously very strong, because I wouldn't be a lotto ticket purchaser that often, but you do be tempted whenever, you know, the jackpot is whatever and that you have so many chances of winning, but I never win.
Yeah, well, somebody has to win. It could be you.
So what's coming up, Chris, this week on Business Matters?
Right, well, in Business Matters this week, three-pronged approach. First of all, looking at a number of business clinics that are going to come next month here in the county. Now, Donegal County Council's Tourism Unit, together with Fáilte Ireland and Local Enterprise Office, they've joined forces to have five business clinics. There'll be one held in each municipal district council area. And it's really geared to people who maybe are thinking of something in the tourist field, or maybe already have something and want to expand. So this is an opportunity to meet people in the sector. Lots of advice will be available at these clinics, and also information about the funding supports that are available. And there are considerable funding. And of course, great opportunities in the tourism sector at the moment. So to find out more, I've been speaking with Mary Fowley-Daly, who's the Senior Tourism Development Officer with Donegal County Council, and she's been explaining what the thinking is behind this initiative.
The thinking behind them was Fáilte Ireland would have in the past had business clinics, held business clinics with the industry here in Donegal, and indeed ourselves in Donegal County Council, Donegal Tourism would have had different events meeting the industry in the county. But this is the first time that collectively Fáilte Ireland, Donegal County Council's Tourism Unit and the Local Enterprise Office have come together to have these business clinics in the different municipal district areas. And what we're looking for is we're looking for people to explore their tourism business idea, you know, in partnership with the different sectors that are there on the evening. So we're inviting people to come along. They're free. You can book a 30-minute information session where you can share your business ideas with the tourism officers that will be there on the night. And also you can learn about the supports that are there for the industry from the local enterprise office. And then I suppose the next steps that you can take in order to advance your tourism idea.
This is great, because Donegal has become such a staycation destination, and it's given people the opportunity. They might have had this idea, and I suppose, you know, Donegal County Council's Tourism Office and Fáilte Ireland and Local Enterprise, the Local Enterprise Office, will help them explore that and see if it is a viable idea.
Absolutely. In particular, since COVID, when a lot of people from down south discovered Donegal, many of them coming back. So the domestic market is thriving. And interestingly, during our discussion, we were talking about golf, which is a very important and lucrative sector of the tourism market. But the big increase last year was visitors from Canada. So not as many Canadians going to the United States, where there's been a little bit of friction.
Imagine the journey they'd have to undertake to get here.
Well, there's direct flights. There's been an increase in the number of direct flights, and that's been the big growth market. So that's interesting to note. But yeah, there's lots of opportunities out there. People in the sector are upbeat about the future. And even at the moment, we're in the shoulder period of the season. There's a promotion on encouraging people to come to Donegal. And especially the outdoor-related events and mm-hmm. activity events, there's been a big spike in
because the weather isn't too bad to be out and about.
And as Mary Fowley Daly says, you know, years ago the weather was seen as an obstacle, mm-hmm. more so from Irish and British people. But if you have the right clothing on, and listen, it's hard
there's
to beat being on a
we
beach
always
on,
discuss
a,
this.
On a wild day with the dog.
Yeah, wrapped up well. And yeah, I just can't deal with the wind and the rain together. But I love going out, big massive umbrella, and it nearly pouring down. I love it.
Yeah, well, I can see if it's windy, the umbrella is going to be off the way down the beach.
I was actually out walking one day and I was wearing a baseball cap and I had an umbrella and I had the dog, and the cap blew off. I was trying to get the dog, run after the hat and keep the umbrella, and a good man came to my rescue then, ran after the hat for me.
Did it go viral on YouTube?
No, thankfully not. But yeah, I leave the hat at home now, or wear one that I know won't fly off the top of my head. So Chris, where can people tune in to Business Matters?
Well, it's on Sunday after the 6 o'clock news. The podcast will also be going out shortly, and also in the programme this week, looking at the Letterkenny Chamber Awards. They're just around the corner. They're being staged next month. A big night there. I've been speaking with Tony Forrester, the CEO of Letterkenny Chamber, and also talking about Halloween Fest, which again is an initiative here in Letterkenny, which is helping local businesses. And I have also a little bit about a Malinhead teenager, 17-year-old Sean McGonigal, who works along with his father, John McGonigal, of Wild Apaca Way, actively involved in social media, and he's now starting his own little support enterprise for people who want advice on where to go in terms of getting the word out there online. So good luck to him, showing plenty of initiative.
17-year-old, it'd be great to have that, them brains at 17 maybe to do something like that. Great. And the Halloween Fest is always brilliant here in Letterkenny as well. And it's great to see, you know, we have Derry, the European capital, but it's great to see different towns bringing forward their own initiatives.
Halloween has become a really big thing now, so it's a boost for local businesses, and we might get a little slight dip in November. We've got Black Friday to look forward to, and before long,
all
Christmas.
Happening. Great. Chris Ashmore, presenter of Business Matters, thank you very much for calling in. So now, some more of your comments. We were talking as Chris was discussing how Christmas is coming down the tracks, and we were talking earlier about the cost of food. So a listener says, I paid €5.24 the other day for a bottle of Coke. Was this a 500ml or 2 litre? That's huge, but even the normal standard small personal bottles have gotten very, very expensive. In relation to the election, just wondering what way the voting register is monitored. As a person that has the disease for 5 years, that is disease for 5 years, getting a voting card. I'm not sure what you mean in relation to it. Deceased for 5 years, getting a voting card. I presume that, you know, the register would be alerted to how, you know, and that person would have been removed. But maybe if you contact the Electoral Commission, they could help you in relation to that, because I'm sure it's not a nice thing to receive as well in the post. In relation to the riots, absolutely disgraceful behaviour. Anyone who justifies that type of behaviour or these actions should be ashamed of themselves. Last night's violence not only distracts from the systemic failures in child welfare, but also shifts focus away from the government's role in importing asylum-related crime. I don't condone rioting, but civil unrest occurs in every country, a listener says, when people are repeatedly ignored by the government. To get to this point, there have been countless failures of government, including failure to deport a failed asylum applicant, failure to provide safety for a child. Yeah, I think that other listener who was saying that the violence distracts from the failures in terms of child welfare and the government's role in the asylum situation that we have here, that, you know, we need better communication, and we need people within different realms to get on board and have a better conversation, because, you know, the resources are being used up by the Gardaí, and then the government are coming out to condemn the riots, but we obviously want action instead. In relation to the presidential election, we need to remember any of Jim Gavin's votes can and probably will be transferred to Heather Humphreys. Yeah, I suppose, will the voters, after Jim Gavin pulling out of the campaign, will they instead now give Heather Humphreys their government vote? Will know on Saturday, hopefully. Hi Highland, anyone I am chatting to has to rebuild their home, is out 40, 50, 60, 80,000 euro of their own money. It's a complete disaster for people. This would only happen in Ireland. It's a huge cost. We were chatting to Damien Dowds earlier, and he said, you know, they've had to put their own money into rebuilding their home. And even though, you know, the home's been rebuilt, they're still dealing with this scheme and waiting for regulation changes, and it's, there just seems to be no end. And he highlighted as well how slow the process is and the very few homes that have been fully remediated to date.
Highland Radio weather updates with McElhenney's. Our Christmas shop has now opened for all your festive shopping needs. Explore our extensive range of decorations, bedding and more in our homeware department, in-store or shop online at McElhenney's.com today.
Today's weather, a mix of scattered showers and sunny spells. Cloud with some outbreaks of rain will move up from the south towards nightfall. Highest temperatures today of 9 to 13 degrees with light to moderate southerly or variable winds. Now, there appears to be an issue with Google Maps and how it is directing people when they're travelling through Donegal. This has happened to me as well in parts of West Donegal. It's taken me on the narrowest of roads. But the concern is that, you know, it's taken people off the main primary roads, and, you know, there's tourists coming to the county as well. Councillor Gary Doherty from the Lifford Stranorna Municipal District is calling for a review of this. I spoke to him a little earlier. Hi then. So, Councillor Gary Doherty, you're calling for the operation of Google Maps to be looked into. I suppose we'll start how this came about for yourself.
Yeah, so really what the issue is that what we've noticed is that vehicles that are travelling from the Donegal town direction towards the Twin Towns and that are heading through the Twin Towns towards Letterkenny, that when this route is typed into Google Maps, that Google Maps is not taking the cars down through the Twin Towns as would be normal practice, but instead it's taking them left across Capri and then across Lowe's Bridge. And this is having real-world consequences, because obviously having vehicles being taken from the National Primary Road onto regional and local roads is not ideal, and that's not the ideal route that we want these vehicles travelling through our district. These roads are not designed for the heavy amount of traffic that they're currently seeing, and this is a real world issue that's coming about because of this issue with Google Maps.
And you mentioned there Logue's Bridge, and we've talked about this many times, that, you know, works do need to be carried out in this, that it's not even fit for purpose for the use of locals.
Yeah, look, Logue's Bridge is something that members in the Lifford Stranorna Municipal District have been raising for a long number of years. We know that there are issues with Logue's Bridge, and until those issues are resolved, we need to be mitigating against any further pressures that are put in the bridge. And I think particularly when we look at the volume of traffic that's being sent down that road, probably unintentionally by Google Maps, because, look, we know that when you're driving along in the car and you've got a destination in Google Maps and Google Maps is telling you to turn left, that 8 or 9 times out of 10, the driver is going to follow the instructions that Google Maps gives them. So that means that these drivers are being unintentionally taken down this route and taken over Logue's Bridge. And that's not ideal. That's not what we want. We want these vehicles. That's not the route that we want these vehicles taken. Ideally, they'll stay on the main road. And that Logue's Bridge and local and regional roads will be mainly used by locals who know the area. That's the volume of traffic that these roads were designed for, not the volume of traffic that we're currently seeing.
And I suppose there's a road safety issue and another element as well, because people are unfamiliar with these roads, and if they're travelling under the dark of night, it's very difficult for them to navigate as well.
Yeah, and look, when we look at the whole system of roads that we have, obviously national primary roads are roads that get the most funding from central government. They're looked after by the TIA, so they're outside of Donegal County Council remit. And the reason that the national primary roads get the majority of funding is because that's where the majority of traffic travels on. So we see the majority of cars travelling on the national primary routes, because they are the arterial routes in and out of County Donegal, and indeed the rest of the counties across Ireland. Local and regional roads don't have the same amount of funding, and they don't have the same amount of funding for road safety aspects. For example, what was raised yesterday at the MD meeting was the issue of speeding. And speeding is something that, look, we would see go safe vans and traffic or speed checks on the national primary roads far more often than we would on local and regional roads. And again, that highlights the whole issue, that if Google Maps is telling cars to come down local and regional roads instead of using the national primary route, then that's something that we need to be engaging with Google on and asking them to update their software to prevent this.
And you said you raised it there with the council. Are they willing now to contact Google, or what does that process look like?
Yeah, look, I suppose this is uncharted territory for everybody, because this is an unusual situation. And I acknowledged that yesterday when I spoke on this, that this is, it's something that, look, if you heard somebody chatting about it, you think that's not such a big deal at all. But it really is. You know, it's having real world consequences. And look, I think it's important that the council do try and make contact with Google and try and look. The only thing that we can do is try and change where the root cause of this problem is. And the root cause is coming from the algorithm in Google Maps that's telling cars to drive over, take a left at Capri and drive over Lowe's Bridge instead of going through the Twin Towns. And look, there are many, there would be many benefits from the vehicles travelling on down through the towns, that they may stop for a coffee or, you know, a bite to eat or whatever. So look, it's really important, look, that we just get this simple thing fixed, and hopefully the council writing to Google and working with Google, that we can get the problem fixed.
Is that something you've experienced in your area, or maybe you've travelled in other parts of the country? You know, I know navigation systems tend to pick the fastest route, but as Gary was highlighting there, it's not often the safest route or the most feasible route to be taking traffic through. And he highlighted there at the end of the piece how, you know, say, for example, in Balbuffet, the main street's missing out on that through traffic that's coming from other parts of the country, coming from Donegal Town, etc. And, you know, they're missing out on that economic benefit as well. To some now of your comments from a couple of issues that we were discussing earlier in the week. Money for unneeded cycle lanes in Letterkenny, yet none for the badly needed bridge at Bunaghy. It has been argued that the traffic issues within Letterkenny will not be addressed until, you know, huge investment from government is forthcoming to get relief roads and get the Bunaghy bridge in place, and that we're going to have to, you know, just deal with the traffic until that investment is made in the town. Another listener says they have Letterkenny destroyed. It's a complete disaster to get around. It stopped going to shop in it, and hundreds are like me. I have heard on so many occasions people, you know, going to come into Letterkenny and they hit the four lanes or they hit the dual carriageway and just the traffic. They don't have the time, if they're coming in now quickly, to sit in the traffic and then potentially sit in the traffic coming back out. And I had asked a local business owner recently in Letterkenny, I think they're based in the main street area, you know, has the ongoing traffic works affected them? They says that they've been absolutely dead. Now, I don't know what the situation is like now, but this was last week, and they were saying, you know, they're trying to pay their employees and then, you know, maybe they'll get a few pound at the end of the week for themselves. But it is having a huge impact on shops and businesses within the town. But then on the other hand, it can be argued that we need these investments, we need these works carried out, such as the active travel plan, that in the long term it will hugely benefit the town. Another listener says the active travel plan for Ballymacool is a good one and 30 years overdue. However, the residents there were arguing that, you know, they're going to lose the parking outside their home. They'll have to walk from a designated parking area. And there's some people who have mobility issues, have a disability, that, you know, they do need the parking right outside their property, and that simply won't work. Another listener says, seems to be that Sinn Féin is a new Green Party in Letterkenny. They want us to abandon our only means of transport and start walking or cycling. Let the Letterkenny Sinn Féin councillor, this listener says, be the first to abandon his car and lead the way to see if the sheep will follow. There was an argument at last week's meeting of the Letterkenny Milford Municipal District about the ongoing active travel plans here in Letterkenny. The works are ongoing and it had caused huge delays on one particular day. But Councillor Jeremy McMonagall had argued, you know, that we need to do these works to improve access within the town, and that, you know, the funding's there, that we need to keep developing it. Another listener says, in relation to Councillor Gary Doherty there, well said, Councillor Doherty, as a resident on the road up past Logues Bridge, it's a nightmare, the volume of traffic that's on it. The speed of the traffic is shocking. It's an accident waiting to happen. This road from Capri, Logues Bridge, Kelly's, Bottling, Letterkenny to Drumkeen is a new bypass of the Twin Towns. It needs to stop. Another listener says the opposition has 102 Dáil and Seanad seats. The government has 127. You need 20 seats to nominate a presidential candidate, but the opposition only nominate one. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael don't control all councils, many of which didn't nominate a candidate. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are a minority in Donegal County Council, but no candidate was nominated. Yet it's claimed it was Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael's fault that there weren't more candidates. It was my understanding that the whole council, all members, had to agree to hold, to let potential candidates represent themselves to the council. So I'm not sure that it was just Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael that blocked that. Anyway, that's it for today's 9 till noon show. My thanks to Carling Orr and to Shannon Wilkin for all their help on this show. Greg will be back tomorrow morning, and John Breslin is coming up on Around the Northwest just after the headlines. Good morning.